voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
So last night we were talking with Micah Sims from Common Cause PA and, you know, trying to figure out what the governor was going to do here in Pennsylvania as the Republicans got the gerrymandered maps to the governor on Friday as mandated by the court order. Would the governor accept them? Would he move it along? What would he do? Well, today he tweeted out, today I'm informing the Supreme Court of PA that I will not accept the proposed map Republican legislative leaders submitted because it too is a partisan gerrymander that does not comply with the court's order or the Pennsylvania Constitution. And here to come and talk about the, well, the setting aside, what's going to happen, where it goes, what this may look like, our good friend Ian Millhiser, senior fellow over at the Center for American Progress, also the editor of Think Progress Justice. Ian, thanks for taking time for us.
It's good to be here. Thanks so much.
So are we surprised by the governor saying too partisan?
I'm not the least bit surprised when you look at the map that the legislature produced. Basically what they did was they produced a map that was just as gerrymandered. According to one analysis I saw, it was even more gerrymandered than the previous one. It gave Republicans even more of an advantage. It was prettier. It had more compact districts. They didn't look like, you know, Disney characters kicking other Disney characters, but it was still a really aggressive partisan gerrymander, and so I'm not at all surprised that the Democratic governor said that he didn't want to sign a Republican gerrymander.
Yeah, and what I found most cute was the fact that we've got a special election coming up here in Pennsylvania on March 13th. Mm-hmm. They actually moved the candidate who's in that race out of the district, and also a number of other Democratic candidates. They shifted the districts to where those folks weren't in those districts to run anymore.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a pretty brazen attempt to say, you know, let's see what we can do to comply with, like, you know, to give the appearance we're complying with the court order, but also let's try to rig this next election as much as possible.
Now, there's part of me that says they did this on purpose, solely so that the governor would, just out of hand reject it, and that the court would end up drawing a new map so that they could then maybe take this on to the Supreme Court. Is that possible, or am I just being kind of, well, jaded?
Well, so certainly I think that it's totally expected that the Republicans in the legislature have been, you know, they've been acting in bad faith all throughout this process. They've refused to comply with court orders. So I'm not surprised that they did what they did here. That said, I think that the state Supreme Court does deserve a degree of the blame because their opinion laying out the standards for partisan gerrymanders, frankly, isn't very good. Partisan gerrymanders are themselves unconstitutional. They got that right. But then the standard they set out is that they favor compact districts. They favor not chopping up different municipalities and different communities, and that all sounds great. But the problem is, especially in a state like Pennsylvania, in Pennsylvania you've got a big Democratic stronghold in Pittsburgh. You've got a big Democratic stronghold in Philadelphia, and Republicans tend to be more spread out. And so if you have compact maps like the ones the court's going to describe, what's going to happen is that all the Democrats in Philadelphia are going to get packed into a tiny number of districts, and all the Democrats in Pittsburgh are going to be packed into a tiny number of districts, and then Republicans are going to control most of the state, and you're still going to have a gerrymandered map.
Right, but, you know, isn't as it was explained to me that, you know, the Pennsylvania state constitution says that the districts have to be compact and contiguous, their words, so isn't that part of this whole problem?
Well, the problem – so the state constitution does say that the state legislative districts, so for the state house and the state senate, those have to be compact. It does not say clearly what the standard is for congressional maps. What the Pennsylvania Supreme Court did is they imported this other standard from the state legislative maps. Now, there's a number of problems with that. I mean, in addition to the fact that it's going to lead to Republican gerrymanders, it's also the case that you have another case pending in front of the Supreme Court right now dealing with the Wisconsin gerrymander. It's likely that the U.S. Supreme Court is going to hand out a completely different standard that doesn't fetishize compactness and stuff like that quite in the same way. And so then, you know, either what's going to happen is that Pennsylvania map drawers are going to have to comply with two different standards, or what I think is going to happen is they're going to find that it's impossible to comply with both standards, and what the state Supreme Court said is going to have to go by the wayside.
Interesting. So we'll revert back to whatever crazy concepts the states come up with. Is that where we're going?
Well, it will revert back to whatever the new federal standard is.
Oh,
so
okay.
So the theory that was presented to the Supreme Court in this Wisconsin case is really, really rather neat and innovative. Some scholars came up with a mathematical formula where basically you could just crunch the numbers and use those to determine how likely it is that a map has been skewed to favor one party or another. And if the math shows that there's a high likelihood that this is a partisan gerrymander, then courts are going to tend to strike those maps down. And so what you could wind up have happening is if you draw – you know, you can draw perfectly compact districts that are still really, really gerrymandered and will fail under this mathematical formula.
Interesting. So kind of like a, you know, one of those plagiarism detectors for gerrymandering.
Exactly. Yeah. The idea here is there's only two things you have to be able to do in order to gerrymander. One is called cracking. And cracking is, so let's say you want a Republican gerrymander and you have a big Democratic stronghold. You can crack that stronghold up and put some of those Democratic voters with a larger number of Republican voters, so their votes are essentially wasted because they're all in districts when they're a minority. Or if you can't do that everywhere, where you can't do that, you can engage in packing. And packing is you say, well, we can't prevent Democrats from having the majority in any district, so we'll find the places where we want Democrats to have the majority, and we'll pack them as tightly with Democrats as possible, make these districts that are 80-90% Democratic, so that, yeah, sure, you get a Democratic rep in that district, but all of those Democrats who are packed in there aren't able to impact the elections in the surrounding districts. And so what this mathematical formula does is it counts up the number of voters who are cracked and it counts up the number of voters that are packed. And if it finds that, like, there's just a ton of Democratic voters who are cracked and packed, that tends to suggest that you have a Republican gerrymander.
Or the other way around, if you've packed it with all Republicans.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a nonpartisan standard. So you know, if you had a Democratic gerrymander, it would detect that, and that would be likely to get struck down as well.
You know, I don't care who you talk to. You know, a voter wants to be able to pick who they're voting for,
right?
And they want their vote to matter. Most people that I talk to, they want competitive districts. They want the war of ideas, and you know, to me, that's the perfect scenario. So when you have what we saw on Friday happened, and like you said, perfectly expectable. I don't think anyone was shocked that the map was even worse than the original.
Right.
Isn't this something we just have to take out of their hands entirely?
I mean, that would be ideal, and there are models for that. Arizona has an independent commission, which so far has been very successful in drawing fairly nonpartisan congressional maps. The danger you have with these nonpartisan commissions, though, is that sometimes they are captured and they become partisan commissions. So you have to make sure that one party or the other doesn't have a way to essentially stack the commission with their people.
Right.
But if you have good mechanisms in place to prevent that from happening, it can work.
Yeah, I have a friend who lives out near Allentown who knows the woman who brought the first constitutional case against the last maps, if you remember those.
Oh, yeah, the Veith case.
Yes. And he said, you know, why don't we just have that woman do it? Or have a computer program that everyone agrees this is how it should be done, and it just bangs it out, and it is
right.
What it is, because we are living in the age of technology.
Right, yeah. I mean, to a certain extent, you know, the thing that has caused the problem can also be the solution. You know, the reason we are in this mess right now is that the computers are so much more sophisticated, and the mathematical, just like the mathematical knowledge we have is so much greater than it has ever been, that, you know, 50 years you couldn't draw maps like this because we just didn't have the capability to do it. Now we do, and in fact, if you look at the briefing in the case in front of the U.S. Supreme Court right now, that's one thing that the briefs, you know, harp on, is they say, look, the technology is becoming so sophisticated now that we can either draw maps that are as fair as we want them to be, or we have the technology to draw maps that are much, much worse than the old maps in Pennsylvania, much worse than the one in Wisconsin right now that's being challenged. It's going to get to the point where elections are completely irrelevant if someone doesn't stop in and prevent the gerrymandering from going on.
Well, as one friend says, you know, if voting, because he doesn't vote, he said if voting actually worked, they wouldn't let us do it. So, you know, if we continue down this road, maybe he'll be right.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, a real long-term challenge the United States is facing. Because, of course, we don't just have this problem with gerrymanders in the House. That's actually a relatively easy problem to fix. You just need to make sure that the maps are drawn in a fair way. You know, you have a Senate right now where, you know, Democrats control only 49 seats of 100, and the minority, so the 49 Dems that make up the minority, represents like 30 million more people than the Republicans who make up the majority. And of course, we have a president who did not win his election. We have a president who took second in the popular vote. So, you know, America's got big problems right now with the fact, you know, I don't think the Electoral College was designed to rig the race for Republicans. There weren't Republicans when it was set up, but that's what it has turned out to be, and it's a serious problem.
So are we in favor of going scrapping the Electoral College and going strict popular vote, mob rule kind of thing?
I mean, I would support. I mean, I think that if you're going to have a presidential democracy, the president should be the person who gets the most votes.
Right. But what do you say to the person, Ian, who goes, well, if that's the case, if we do that, you're only going to have people campaigning in New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, you know, the major urban centers in the rest of the country. Well, shame on you.
Well, I mean, you know, do people running for governor of Pennsylvania only campaign in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh? I mean, you know, we have models for executives being elected in states that have both urban centers and suburban and rural regions. And, you know, I suspect what would happen if we had if we moved to a popular vote at the presidential level is that the race for the president of the United States would look a whole lot like the race for governor of Pennsylvania.
Look, I'm in favor of it. I don't see how you can become president without having a clear mandate of the
right.
popular vote. It just you know, we've done it a couple of times, and it just never seems to quite work out. Let me ask you a last question then. You know,
sure thing.
Now that the governor has the maps, he's rejected them. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court is going to draw them, as I understand. Do you think this is going to be ready in time for the upcoming, you know, March 13th election, for the upcoming primaries here in May? Do we see this happening, or do you think this is going to be stalled out?
I mean, I'm optimistic they can get the maps together pretty quickly. The state Supreme Court has picked a guy as what's called a special master. A special master is like an expert who helps the Supreme Court implement its order and like makes findings of fact if need be. And the guy they picked is pretty good. He's a nationally known scholar of election law. And of course, because these computers have gotten so sophisticated now, once you have the data, you can plug it into a computer, you know, like the population data, you can plug it into a computer and kick out a map in 5 minutes for you. You know, it's just a matter of getting the data plugged into the machine and getting the job done. So I think I'm optimistic they'll be able to get the maps. I think, you know, there will be some challenges. There'll probably be another round of litigation that probably won't go anywhere, but it'll stress people out. And then there's going to be, you know, the fun of like logistically making sure each precinct, you know, everyone knows which precinct is when with which district for the primary. But, you know, this doesn't strike me as, you know, as an impossible task. I mean, every 10 years there's a redistricting cycle, and often, you know, the maps for, you know, the maps that preceded the 2010 election, you know, sometimes it goes, you know, it takes a while to come up with those as well. So I think this can be done. It's suboptimal that it has to happen so quickly, but you know, it's a better alternative than running an election on rigged maps.
I'm right there with you. No, I mean, you got to fix this up. But at the end of it, I still go back to what they turned in on Friday. Really cute that they, all of the major Democratic congressional candidates, they just districted right out of the
yep.
district. Found that very, very funny. But not, again, not surprising. Ian, I appreciate the time. Love to have you come back as this continues and we find out where we end up.
All right, I'll look forward to it.
Always good stuff. Our good friend Ian Millhiser. You want to check out some of his writings? We'll get a link at therickssmithshow.com of how you can check it out. Quick break right back here. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. It's desperate times, so desperate measures we explore. Marching on the Capitol to lobby leaders for involvement. 3,000 people screaming out. Where's our government? Lawsuits and arraignments. Members under company surveillance. Public divided, either they love us or they hate us. Profit billions off our back, and it's still not enough. They should have took into account that we never give up. We'll be here one day longer. The people's voice is stronger.
Class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.